Live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Monday to you. Brought to you by Wild West Guns and Gold. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony here with you. Super Bowl 49 is set. We had one snoozer of a game and one thriller down to the wire, although wasn't that thrilling and compelling for the first 55 minutes or so. Jeffrey, how are you today?
I'm doing good. Really enjoyed the first game. Like you talked about, what a great game that was. I mean, who in the world would have expected Seattle to be able to come back?
Well, they'd done nothing.
I mean,
the whole
nothing,
day.
Nothing. I mean, you know, and you got to give credit. I mean, we always, you know, the emphasis so much is always on offense and defense and rarely special teams. Special teams won that game for the Seattle Seahawks. You got the fake field goal that resulted in a score, then the onside kick. I mean, what a tremendous game for Seattle. And then you can also look at it from the perspective that Green Bay really gave it away.
Yeah.
I mean, at the end of that game, the onside kick, I mean, that was a flat out structural flaw in as far as doing your job. The tight end, and I pulled up Green Bay's roster here, Richard Rodgers, the
right.
one who had the ball go through his hands. Okay. He's not supposed to recover. He's a blocker. Okay. He's not even supposed to be trying to catch the ball.
I got you.
That's Jordy Nelson. He's supposed to block. He's supposed to block the guy that made the recovery. So what, I mean, well, you talk about, that's why, and I remember in the game watching how when Richard Rodgers came off the sideline, and did you see the coach just chewing him?
Oh, of course he did.
I mean, chewing him. And I'm going, how in the world can you chew a guy in which you, he didn't catch the ball?
What happens if he catches it though? Does he get chewed or does he get patted on the head and they say, hey, way to be Johnny on the spot? Was it Bostic?
Yeah.
Bad job.
Yeah, it was another tight end.
Or was the other tight end?
Yeah.
Bostic. Whatever it was.
Regardless.
Yeah, Brandon Bostic, 86.
Yep.
Like I got my six upside down. And then the other thing is that, you know, in that ball game, it was about the 5 minute mark when Morgan Burnett makes the interception and lays down. Okay, lays down.
Tony and I were just talking about this stuff.
What are you doing?
Look, what happened in the Dallas-Detroit game, right? DeMarcus Lawrence recovers a fumble, or was it an interception or a fumble recovery?
No, it was a fumble. It was just a fumble.
He picks it up, and what happens? He gets stripped of the football.
Yeah, but here's the thing. The Green Bay guy, Morgan Burnett, had green. Green, okay, when you make the interception, and then you get a Seattle guy around you. Fine, then lay down. Don't just lay down right then and there.
I got you. Pick up. You could have picked up some yardage.
You're on an interception return when you've got the ability to carry your momentum forward. You got to remember the offense has basically five guys that are 300 pounders that don't run very well. And then you have how many guys that have the ability to make the play on that? I mean, realistically, okay, with momentum. Not many. So why would you lay down and feel like, okay, our offense, all they have to do is take a knee at that point? It was still over,
but Jeff, at that point, Seattle had done nothing. Russell Wilson had thrown for 76 yards with four interceptions.
You're on the road?
The momentum, to me, the momentum is Green Bay's defense had shut that team down. That was where the momentum was the whole game, and let's just not do something stupid. I'm sure he's thinking in that instance. He did it out of the best intentions. I don't blame Morgan Burnett in that instance. All these things
score
all had to happen together.
Mike McCarthy
at the same time.
Conservative.
Well, I mean, I
get it.
What would you do if you come out there, you throw it incomplete on first down?
But you've got one of the greatest quarterbacks in the game today, and you're on the road.
Understood.
Why not give him the ability to close the game out?
And because again, you're playing an offense that has done nothing.
You know, I get the entire game. I get that. And I mean, it had to be a perfect storm, right? For Seattle.
That's what I'm saying. It was a perfect storm, and a lot of these things happen.
That's why you can't play conservative. Mike McCarthy got very conservative at the end of that ball game. You could even argue that once they got the ball with a minute left in that ball game, and you had three timeouts, that they were trying to conserve the timeouts, and they were really kind of accelerating their level of play. Instead of playing at the end of the game, look, we've got three timeouts. Let's use them. We're going to go and try to win this game instead of, having the attitude, look, all we need is a field goal to tie this thing up and send it in overtime. Yeah, and I know the overtime rules are different now and that you can get a chance if your opponent kicks a field goal. But you can't assume any of that. You have to assume when you're on the road in that type of situation, I've got one of the greatest quarterbacks in the National Football League. Let's let him win the game.
I agree with you in that instance. You got to try, especially at the end, because then they don't get the ball back. There won't be enough time in the game.
Game over.
But in terms of running the football, if you throw it on first down and it's incomplete, right, now you're second and long, okay, and you're in a situation where they've already saved one timeout. So instead they run it on first down, which I think most people would have done.
Sure.
Run it on first down. Well, you lose 4 yards.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're second and 14. You're in a disadvantageous position to drop back and throw the football. Do you throw it in second and 14? I mean, I think it just kind of snowballed a little bit on Mike McCarthy at that point in time.
Well, there was a lot of things that snowballed. I mean, the not doing your job on the onside kick, laying down on an interception when you had an opportunity to make something happen on that interception, and then getting conservative towards the end of that ball game on the road at Seattle. I mean, to me.
They played a conservative right from the very beginning.
They
could have tried to punch it in from the 1 foot line. And they settle for a field goal early on. And you can debate both sides of that. Look.
Twice.
Twice. Right. But
from the 1 yard line, they kicked the field goal twice.
Yep.
Right. But you can, if you, when the game plays out the way it did, you're sitting there, you say, you know, all these decisions are going to lead to you having a 19-7 lead with 5 minutes left in the game and the football. I find it hard to fault much of what came before then. And to me, it's what happened in the last five minutes.
I didn't fault Mike for the field goals early in that ball game. You're on the road. Your defense is dominant. Get some points. Don't walk away with it for nothing. You know, the crowd would go crazy. I get that early in the ball game. But to me, it's just the issues that happened late in the ball game. And, you know, and Mike McCarthy was asked at the end of that ball game, after the game, would you do anything differently? And he said, no, wouldn't do anything differently. What do you mean you wouldn't do anything differently? Of course you would. You should have done something differently. You didn't win. I hate when coaches say, no, I wouldn't have done anything differently.
But look, let's say it's just a hypothetical. Let's say it's the last play of the game. You're down 4, right? So a touchdown, you're either going to score a touchdown, you're not going to score a touchdown. The game's going to end on this play because field goal's not going to matter, right? You got the ball at the 6-inch line.
Mm-hmm.
And you're Seattle. And you hand it to Marshawn Lynch, right? Is that going to be the play call more often than not in that situation? Or it's a pretty defensible play call, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So you run it and you get stuffed. And you ask Pete Carroll, would you have done anything differently? And no, you know, that's the guy we go to in that situation. Next time we hope we get it in the end zone, but I would have called the same play.
Okay. Now, you're the coach, right? Okay. Marshawn Lynch is an absolute beast.
Sure.
And he's not getting enough credit for the Seattle Seahawks victory.
120 yards in the second half.
He was the man. I mean, he was the one that gave them a chance. Okay, so you know that he is the man for your offense. But if you're the Green Bay coach, who's the man of your offense?
Aaron Rodgers.
You're doggone right.
I gotcha.
Did you put the ball in his hands at the end of that game to give yourself an opportunity to close the game out?
Well, they didn't put it in his hands at a lot of instances in that game. They got conservative at the goal line. But again, Tony, you and I, we happened to watch Green Bay earlier this year.
Yeah.
Get down to the 1 yard line and run it 4 consecutive times. And we even said, why didn't they at least give Aaron Rodgers, you get the best quarterback in the game, give him one shot to throw. They got stuff. They've had a problem all year in these short yardage red zone situations. And I'm sure, at least speaking to the early part of the game, they're thinking, look, we've been there, we've done that, and we've come up empty. Let's get some points on the board. Because I think that's one of the things people are criticizing him for today.
Look, they mismanaged the last 5 minutes of the game. And if the coach isn't willing to say that, then he's lying.
I don't know how some of the
stuff that happened in that game, they didn't handle that the right way. But what is not being talked about from this game, and it should be, is the fact that the Seattle defense, who had the ball being turned over constantly in their face, in their own territory, that defense gave up 19 points going into the final drive. The defense for Seattle was fantastic.
Which is why I still think they win the Super Bowl.
19 points now going to that final drive, and then the ball was turned over five times.
And turnover in point blank range a few of those times.
I mean,
just here you go.
The whole first half of the game was living on their side of the field.
Real? Who got the unsportsmanlike penalty early on in that game? The 15-yarder.
I forget who it was.
That then moved them back from first and goal at the 4 to the 19-yard line.
After the first pick,
they ended up getting it down to the 1.
Clay Matthews.
Was it Clay Matthews?
Yeah, well, I know that you had the one hit on Russell Wilson on the interception.
That's right. I think that was
the next one. The first interception, they had somebody. It was a taunting penalty after the first one.
It was a defensive lineman on the interception was taunting one of the offensive linemen. I think it was Sweezy.
Right.
So that was the penalty.
No, I absolutely agree with that. And that was the point I was going to make, is that having seen what we've seen, who do you like in the game 2 weeks from today? I mean, New England wins in blowout fashion. Seattle is losing for all but the last bit of the game.
I mean, if you asked me last week, which, you know, I had said last week that I think Seattle's going to win it all, I would have said Seattle. This week, after watching the way that the Patriots just dominated that game and the way that the Seattle Seahawks just did not look like they had a highly functioning offense, I mean, right now, your first inclination is to say the New England Patriots.
I think that's natural, but I agree with what Tony said. The story yesterday was the Seattle defense. As many times as they were put in bad positions, and you're going up against an Aaron Rodgers-led offense, and you still only allow what you allowed.
And what's going to be the status of Richard Sherman going to this
game? Well, that's a big – Richard Sherman and Earl Thomas.
You know, because, well, I think Earl Thomas landed in what looked like – because I've had both of these injuries happen. When Earl Thomas landed, he landed on his elbow with his elbow up above his shoulder. Typically, that is a sublex shoulder, which means your shoulder will pop in and out. And it doesn't stay out. It pops out and then pops right back in. That's something that, hey, look, with 2 weeks of rest, he's going to be fine. He's going to be fine. Richard Sherman was tackling one of the Green Bay wide receivers, and then Cam Chancellor, this was a result of friendly fire, Cam Chancellor comes in and literally hits Richard Sherman right on the back of the elbow, and it hyperextends the elbow.
Right.
And I was very surprised that Phil Sims, I believe it was Phil, Troy Aikman, I guess it was, they didn't point that out when they had the opportunity to show what happened to Richard Sherman. The network really, I thought, blew that one, when they should have gone back and had Troy Aikman really explain what happened to Richard Sherman. I thought they missed a great opportunity there, because it was very clear when I watched the replay first. I went, ooh, you know, when they first showed it. Well, then they just all of a sudden they kind of just ignored it. Richard Sherman's kind of banged up and never went back to it. They should have went back and showed the replay of what happened to Richard Sherman on that, which was a result of friendly fire. And the question there is it just going to be inflammation and pain, or was there something further that was going on that could result in him not being available in 2 weeks?
Which would be a huge impact on the game, obviously.
Huge impact.
If Richard Sherman's unable to play
huge
in that football game. Went from a 2.5-point line. Vegas had said that before the game. They were going to set it at a 2.5-point line if Seattle faced New England. And as the day played out and you saw how dominant New England looked, ended up being a pick'em on the board in Vegas. No Super Bowl's ever opened as a pick'em.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great matchup. It's a great matchup. And, you know, this is an interesting game because, you know, the Seattle Seahawks won Super Bowl last year. And last year they were kind of the underdog. People were kind of rooting for them. You know, they play hard. They play with a lot of high energy. And the New England Patriots have always been kind of that black hat with Spygate, now Footballgate, you know, is the pressure on the footballs, which we can get into at some point here about the mechanics of how that works. You know, so who's the bad guy now? Is it the Patriots?
I think it's still the Patriots.
But I don't know that there's a good guy.
No, I don't know if there is, but if I'm trying to weigh a relative bad guy in this scenario.
I know who I like more. I mean, Russell Wilson's my favorite player in the whole league.
But to be honest,
I'll be pulling for Seattle.
I watched Doug Baldwin screaming about how nobody gave us a chance.
Oh, I know.
Shut up! You're the defending Super Bowl champs, number one seed in the NFC. You're at home. Are you kidding me? No one gave you a chance. Shut up.
What was worse, that or Russell Wilson crying?
The whole lot of it was, you know, they're saying this is one of the great games in NFL history. No, it was a great 5 minutes.
Yeah.
A terrible game. Seattle didn't show up for the first 55 minutes of that football game. True, their offense didn't. But they didn't make it very competitive for the first 55 minutes of that football game. If you want to get in today, 641-1010, fan feedback question of the day. Brought to you by the Foundation Professionals of Florida, asking you, who do you want to win the Super Bowl and why? In other words, not necessarily who you think will win, but who are you rooting for? Do you have to convince yourself, come up with a reason to root for or against one of these teams if they're not your team in particular? We'll get into that today. We'll get into the state of the Jaguars offensive coordinator search. I did interview Adam Gase yesterday. From the Denver Broncos, their offense coordinator, in Rapoport, reporting this morning that he expects it to come down to either Jacksonville or Baltimore for Gase to eventually land one of those jobs. The Ravens plan to interview him soon, according to reports. So we'll keep an eye on that. We'll go through the list of candidates that they've already definitely interviewed at this point in time. I'm told nothing's going to happen today, but possibly in the next few days you'll see this position locked down for the Jacksonville Jaguars. John Osier going to join us coming up in about 20 minutes. He's live out at the Senior Bowl in Mobile. Things get underway this week with the Jags coaching staff coaching the South team there. A lot to dig into today if you want to talk NFL playoffs or the Jags all season. 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
They did a good job making plays, and we didn't. You know, it seemed like they were more on the details, and we weren't. You know, my play was not up to par for where it needs to be to give you a chance to beat a quality team like them. It's a great atmosphere. It's a fun place to play, but they certainly had our number tonight.
You know, there's a lot of motivation for a lot of different reasons. You know, I've had a lot of belief in my teammates over the course of the entire year, so you know, you don't want to judge your team after three or four games into the season. And it's important not to ride the roller coaster. So we put ourselves in a good position, you know, getting into the playoffs, won two good home games, and now, you know, we're in the Super Bowl, so it's pretty sweet.
Andrew Luck and Tom Brady obviously on opposite ends of the emotional spectrum yesterday. The shame of it is the Patriots didn't need any deflated balls, anything like that. But do you doubt that there could be truth to that? I mean, because it's the Patriots, I think you feel like...
That's why.
Right.
I mean, that's why it's an issue. But here's the thing with the balls. What they do is they have two sets of balls. Okay, you give one to the Green Bay, or not Green Bay, one to the Indianapolis Colts, one set of balls to the Colts. Another set goes to the New England Patriots. And typically they get to have those balls on like a Saturday. And then the equipment guys will get those balls ready. Now, back in the old days, they would take these balls and would take like these little short bristled scrub brushes and rub them down and try to make them as tacky and as sticky as possible, rub them down with alcohol. They would take the K balls, put them in the dryers so that they would get more pliable, so the kickers can get more range out of them. But then they started putting some limitations on it as far as what you could do and couldn't do to those balls, but they still are allowed to rub them down. You're trying to get that sheen off of that leather on the outside, so it gets a little bit of the slickness off of it. But then the balls go back to the officials, and it's on the officials at that point to be able to check every ball. So for this, you know, inflatable gate or whatever you want to call it.
Deflate gate.
I mean, come on. I mean, the officials have the balls back to in their hands on game day.
Well,
it's
their
responsibility to check the balls.
But here's the thing, and you're right, they do. They get the balls with 2 hours and 15 minutes before kickoff. Okay, the way it's written in the rule book, the home team makes 12 footballs available. The road team makes 12 footballs available. Then the home team makes an additional 12 backup balls available, and the road team can opt to give their own dozen backup balls if it's a game being played outside in condition. So you're possibly looking at 48 footballs mm-hmm. in all that they're looking at. The fact that the league has confirmed there is an investigation going on, because this would seemingly be a pretty easy thing to shut down. The referee says, no, I checked all the balls. They're always in my possession. Nobody else had access to them. Boom, done. Where else is the investigation going? But the fact that the investigation is happening, I think, leads people to wonder, well, did the referee do his due diligence in checking all the footballs, or do they get in the habit of where they're just like, okay, everyone's bringing in the footballs. You know, they look good. I don't know.
Just set them over there.
Well, I mean, I really don't know. I mean, I don't know how diligent they are in checking the pressure, I guess, on each football. Or if they didn't, if they did check them properly, did they secure the balls before they were given to the ball attendant? Okay. Was there some break in the chain of custody of these footballs? And who had access to them, and who could have done such a nefarious deed?
The pressure in the balls had nothing to do with that win.
I agree with you.
You know, the Patriots took the air out of the ball literally and put it on the ground and pounded the Colts.
But you know what that would be like to me, Jeff? People who say, well, Barry Bonds is a Hall of Famer anyway. He didn't need to cheat. But he did. Okay? And I'm not saying that I don't know if they did or not. I mean, I don't know. This investigation may prove to be there's nothing to this. The referee had him. He checked them all. End of story. But with the track record of Bill Belichick, I don't think I'm the only one in America who thinks, even if he didn't need to do it, would Belichick cheat to get an advantage?
And Don Shula's sitting there somewhere going right now going, I told you so.
And so Bob Kraft's like, what, we're going to lose a third round pick over this? So what? We're in the Super Bowl. Right. It doesn't really matter what happens at that point in time. I have no idea.
It doesn't matter.
If you deflate them, I guess the idea is you can grip them
easier.
Be able to squeeze the football.
It's easier to catch. I mean, you know, it's just like playing in backyard football. You take a football and you always want it kind of soft because it's easier to catch and it's easier to hold on to. And, you know, a harder ball is obviously harder to hold on to.
Quite frankly, I would think it'd be the opposite. If any team, you would think going into that game, you're like, well, there's a really good chance they're going to try to pound LeGarrette Blount or one of these backs like Jonas Gray pounded the Colts earlier this year with a 200-yard game. Whereas the Colts are not even attempting to run the football at this stage in the postseason. They're the one who's going to throw it every single time. So if anybody would benefit more, you would think, from a deflated football, it would be the Indianapolis Colts in that situation.
Well, see, they don't play the same balls. See, the Colts play with their balls. Patriots play with their balls.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Everybody's playing with their own balls.
Right. Each ball
it's
has
like the K-ball. The teams have their own thing.
Yeah. Each team, and literally each ball, has a stamp on it. It says either Colts or it says Patriots. I mean, that's the way it's typically been done.
All right. Everybody let my play with your own balls line go right on by with no comment. And that's fine. That's a mature room we've got right here, he says, not looking at himself. 641-1010. Let's get Rick on with the first call of the week here on Jaguars today. Good morning, Rick. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. I'm not well-versed, but I didn't understand why they last week there was something said about illegal substitutions or something or other. And then I noticed yesterday Bill Belichick sent two people in, one reported, one didn't. Could you explain to me, please, what was supposed to be illegal or how that runs? And I'll take it off the air.
Well, it wasn't anything necessarily that was illegal. They brought an extra lineman in, I don't know his name, 71, for the New England Patriots, and they had him and Nate Solder, the usual starting left tackle, and both of them were in eligible positions. Now, 71 did report. Nate Solder did not report as an eligible number. So however they lined up, if you're going to be in an eligible position and you have a non-eligible number, you have to report. If you do not, it is a penalty. And that's all that happened there. Nate Solder is supposed to go and basically take both hands and go in front of his jersey, like, and make an up and down motion with his hands to the official to let him know, I'm going to be in an eligible receiver's position. And so that the defense, they can notify the defense that, hey, 77 is eligible or 71 is eligible. And Nate Solder did not do the hand movement to the official so that the official in turn could not notify the defense that he was eligible. Not a big deal. It's not cheating.
Oh, no. That's not cheating whatsoever. And what he's been doing with these substitutions over the last few weeks is putting guys who are typically eligible receiver types as ineligible receivers. And in the case last week of Humana Mooney.
There you go.
It was he and Edelman.
He's always called him Huey.
It was Huey and Edelman last week, neither one of which is typically an ineligible number. Because you've got a backup tight end and a wide receiver, but because they took a lineman out, it was Huey who ended up being ineligible, or ended up being eligible, and they made Edelman ineligible. But the way they split him out off the formation made
him
look like he was
covered
a slot
him like
receiver.
They were eligible.
Right, which you can try to deceive all you want, but there is a point where the referees, I think, lost control of the situation last week in not pointing it out or not giving Baltimore enough time to react. You can run trick plays. That's not at issue. You can even put in different guys as eligible receivers, but the defense has to know. That's why you typically linemen wear numbers in a certain range, and those are the guys who are ineligible, and so on and so forth. But they were trying a lot of different things with formations yesterday, and that's one of the drawbacks. If you do try to do it too much, sometimes it can backfire on you, as it did in that one case.
Well, I think Belichick likes to be able just to test the limits of the rules, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's not cheating or anything else. I mean, that's playing within the rules.
I agree.
And trying to exploit certain things in the rule book to your advantage. That's legal. That's not cheating. So I don't have any issue at all with Bill Belichick trying to create opportunities by making sure that he's very aware of the rule book, which he has done.
But will everyone in America who's not a Patriot fan be rooting for some obscure, otherwise ineligible Seahawk to catch a touchdown in 2 weeks? I might.
Well, a perfect example of, you know, in the Seattle game, okay, when the Seattle Seahawks lined up for that field goal try in that game, which they had the fake, and they threw it to, you know, backup offensive lineman. That backup offensive lineman
had to report.
He goes to the official, as he's basically lined up as a tight end. He goes to the official and rubs his hand up and down, you know, in front of his jersey numbers to let the official know, I'm eligible in the way that I'm lining up on this play. If he did not do that prior to that field goal try and he caught that pass, it would have been a penalty and that touchdown would have been nullified.
Right. Which, let me ask you, on a typical field goal effort, you've got a mix of guys in there. On a field goal, not a field goal block, but you're trying to execute a field goal. You may have 7 offensive linemen in the game, something like that, right? Because you're basically putting your big guys into block for a very short period of time. If they're not running a fake, do those extra eligible guys typically report?
Always have to.
If they
don't report and they line up as an eligible receiver, that's an automatic
penalty, even if it's just a kick.
I'm not sure about that.
So either way, you got to report your number there. Let's go to the phones. Greg is next up here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Hey guys. How are you?
Good. What's up?
I've got a question for Jeff. Jeff, one thing I noticed this year about when Blake Bortles, the game, he threw 2 pick sixes. The second pick six, he just ran out of bounds. And my son and I looked at each other, it's like, what was that about? And you know, you think 6'5", 230, and I realize the coaches will tell him to get out of the way. But boy, you see a different passion when you look at like Andrew Luck, and I mean the way he went after when he threw the pick. So I kind of wanted to get Jeff's take on that whole situation.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about, and the interception that you're talking about, it appears that he ran out of bounds, but there was a blocker right there. You know, it's not like he just flat out turned it down. Now, if you wanted to bring up a play over the last 5 or 6 years in which Peyton Manning threw an interception and have him literally just like turn and run the other way, I would say, yeah, you're dead on the money. It's kind of embarrassing. But with that interception, Blake had a blocker that was right there. And he didn't do what maybe a normal position player would do and try to fight through the block with a forearm and try to make the tackle. I don't want my quarterback doing that. I really don't. I want my quarterback, franchise quarterback, and I'm not saying that he is a franchise quarterback, but he's expected to be. I want him to understand that you don't put your body at risk to try to take on a block to make a tackle. You try to make the tackle, but you don't put your body at risk to make the tackle.
All right, you saw the first interception Russell Wilson threw yesterday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bounced off Curse and got picked by who was it? Was it?
Ha-ha.
Ha-ha Clinton Dix.
Ha-ha got the first one and returned it down to the 4. The second one's where he got clean.
And Wilson basically is throwing a cross-body block to knock him out of bounds there, right? I mean,
playoff game's a little different.
Right, and maybe that's it. It's a final game, right, because if you lose, you're going home.
That's right.
Regular
season game is a little different.
Because quite frankly, I get Peyton Manning's a 39-year-old quarterback now, and really even...
Yeah, but he's been doing that when he was a 34-year-old quarterback.
True. Okay, that's what you weigh.
That.
You say, okay, is it worth it for Peyton to make that tackle, even if we give up a touchdown on this play, compared to the risk of losing Peyton Manning?
And that's why I'm very slow to criticize Peyton Manning. In fact, I've shown Peyton Manning on his interceptions. In fact, it was last year at Denver where he threw Paul Posluszny pick six, right? And Paul Posluszny is running down the field, and Peyton Manning, he wants nothing to do with trying to make a tackle.
Well, who the hell is he going to catch, right?
But he could have made it. But I mean, I get it. I mean, it's Peyton Manning. I'm not saying because, you know, he's Peyton Manning that he shouldn't try to make tackle, but
It's what he means to that franchise.
It's what he is. I mean, are you willing to risk your golden meal ticket to make a tackle on one play when he can throw three touchdowns later in the ballgame to make up for that
right.
pick six?
Richard Sherman dislocates his elbow because his own guy hits him trying to make a tackle, right? Same thing can happen in the mishmash of what's going on after a turnover mm-hmm. in that circumstance. So it is a difficult position, I think, to know what's right in any one point in time. 641-1010 if you want to get on board.
Let me bring this yeah. up here. You know, when it comes to turnovers, the guy that I think that was probably the most fun to watch in Jaguars history when there was an offensive turnover,
Maurice Jones-Drew. Yeah.
He was the
headhunter.
He was the best.
Yeah, turned into a safety.
I mean, the guy turned into an absolute animal.
He was definitely a heat-seeking missile
oh my
in
gosh.
Those circumstances. We'll go to Mobile next. John Osier going to join us, the senior writer from Jaguars.com on the ground with Senior Bowl practices getting underway today. So we'll get into that and more coming up with John right here on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Sounds like one of Wagaman's requests right here, man. Something to take you deep into the woods. Killing some animals
what?
Out there. I don't know. That sounds a little country song. To me. Is it a good song?
It's a great song.
See, I told you. It would have been one of your questions. Is it Alice in Chains?
One of my,
it is.
My favorite Pandora
sounds
stations
country
I got
to
on
me.
My phone. Alice in Chains is far from country.
Doesn't this sound country if you didn't know this Alice in Chains?
Yeah, a little bit.
Hey, that's all I'm saying. I guess I don't know the complete discography of Alice in Chains.
I can see it.
You know, you can see me not knowing it? You
know what? No, I can see this being known as a country song by the opening.
All right, that's all I'm saying.
Tyler, when we come back, play him a little edgy.
All right.
That'll come up later on. We'll look forward to that on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on Jaguars Day. By the way, fan feedback spotlight today asking you again, just who do you want to see win in this matchup of two evil empires colliding in Super Bowl 49 in 2 weeks? Tweet us at MD_1010XL. At Logs 56, L-O-G-S 56, at 1010XL, Fat Tony. Right now we go to Mobile, where the senior writer for Jaguars.com is holding court. Senior Bowl time, John Osier joins us here. What's up, Johnny O? How are you?
Well, a couple of quick thoughts. First of all, it's probably fitting that Logs is on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, isn't it?
It's finally all come together, John. We finally
yeah, I mean, that's
out.
Kind of the...
It's a good fit.
I can't
Much
believe
more
we didn't see this before. You got to get him quick sponsor day. And... second of all, is there room in your heart to have me on the show when Logs is on the show, Dan?
Well, I wanted you to experience just how good it is when Jeff is in with us here.
So I can see it for myself, right?
Absolutely. John, a couple of things before we get to Senior Bowl in specifics, okay? The Jags have interviewed Adam Gase, and by my count, now they've talked with Adam Gase, Kirby Wilson, the Vikings running backs coach, Anthony Lynn, the Jets running backs coach, Greg Roman, the former San Fran OC who's now going to go to Buffalo, Nathaniel Hackett, Buffalo's former OC, Doug Marrone, their former head coach, and Greg Olsen, Oakland's current offense coordinator, I guess, over the last couple of years. A story out on Big Cat Country right now indicates, according to a source of theirs, that the Jags want to make it a trifecta hiring of Adam Gase, Doug Marrone in the OC and O-line categories, respectively, and then Greg Olsen as a yet-to-be-identified, possibly quarterback's coach position. What do you make of that report? What are you hearing in terms of the scuttlebutt around that position right now?
Well, that makes some sense, and I saw it late last week that it started feeling like the coordinator search and the search for these positions was starting to take shape. So the early names were great, but they felt exploratory. I've said all along, I thought a guy like Marrone, somebody with an older head maybe, to be involved around the offensive line made sense. And as long as you had somebody focused on the quarterback as well. So I'm not sure exactly how it'll play out, if they get all three of those guys, if they get two in some combination. Jeff may be hearing something different, but, that has worked before, where you go look for your guys and then sort of figure out the combination that you want to have once they're in place, once you sort of land those guys. These guys can do more than one thing, and, Jeff may have some other thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, you always want to get the best coaches that you can possibly get, no matter what their titles are. The one thing, though, that I kind of reflect on when you start talking about, you know, any candidates is that, you know, my thoughts are always first and foremost to the guys that are currently on the staff that are kind of in limbo.
Sure.
You know, and so you hope that with them being in limbo, that there is some resolution to filling these positions so that they can kind of gauge where they are and where they need to be with some of the openings that are still out there.
You know, and I know, so, Jeff, not to interrupt, I know that was, you know, that's been on Gus's mind from the start. It said from day one, you know, the Tuesday that the Jed Fish stuff came down, you know, he talked to these guys, has been as upfront as he can be. But as you know, Jeff, the reality is sometimes when you're going to make a change, you know, the sort of thing we're talking about happens.
Well, and Gus's responsibility is not to the current staff. It's to the organization as a whole. But I mean, again, John, you're right in that Gus does, you know, feel for those guys and he has been up front with them. And from talking to Gus at different times kind of through this process, that's always been his you know, primary concerns to try to be, not fast in this process, but, you know, to not to make it prolonged to where all of a sudden some of his guys that maybe are not going to be back won't miss out on an opportunity to end up somewhere else.
John,
well, because
it's,
you know,
sorry.
Go ahead, Jeff.
No, go ahead, John.
Well, you know, one thing that you've learned about Gus in the last couple of years, and we're kind of getting off track because everyone wants to know about the offensive coordinator, what's going to happen, but I think he is the kind who can handle this sort of situation well because he is very upfront. He's upfront with players when they come in, you know, when they come in, hey, at some point you may not be here. Here's what we can do for you if you're an undrafted guy. So out of all the coaches I've ever dealt with, he is as conscious of that and of making sure people, I guess, get the right opportunity and are in the right environment, even though it's acknowledged. Everybody involved, Jeff says this as well as anybody, it's a business that offers no guarantee. So it's often a short-term job security business, and, you know, on some level, that's what we're looking at this week.
John, because the Jags are in this process of trying to get an offensive coaching staff in place, I know I've gotten the question a lot, what exactly is the process going to look like for them while they're out at the Senior Bowl this week? How is that going to work, coaching the offensive side of the ball?
Well, that's a good question. As of right now, you know, I have to say I don't know. I had heard that Frank Selfo was going to call the plays. That may have changed in the last couple of days. It's very much, you know, I would think that's the storyline we're going to watch. I wish I had more on that. But my guess is that Frank calls the plays, and I'm not sure we know exactly what follows if things start to break in the next couple of days.
Well, I mean, according to Gus on the last Gus Bradley show last Thursday, that Frank Selfo will call plays. But, I mean, what does that mean? I mean,
sure. You know, I mean,
it doesn't really mean much. It just means that he's going to call plays for the Senior Bowl. You know, but I do know that they're en route, the coaching staff. They departed about 10 a.m. They have a team meeting about 8 o'clock tonight with the players, and then the Senior Bowl holds practices Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. You know, Friday is obviously an abbreviated day, and then Saturday's the game. So they're going to get to work tonight.
John, do you have a sense? Yeah,
it's not an ideal situation, but it's also not a long-term impact situation. I mean, the things we're talking about aren't going to impact the team and the offense in 3 weeks. So, you know, keep it in perspective. It's a problem, but it's certainly something they can work out.
Where are the strengths on this South team roster, John? What is the consensus feeling going into this week of practice? What positions are the areas that may, in fact, line up with what the Jags' needs are, or just are the deepest positions that they're going to get the best chance to evaluate?
Well, they certainly seem to have some strength. Overall in the game, there's some strength at running back. You know, if you think that this team might take a guy second or third round, you know, Cameron's artist Payne from Auburn's here. I'm not looking at the North team roster right now, but there are certainly guys in this game who fall into that category. It's sort of intriguing on the defensive line. There's some guys who you would project to go second round. I don't know that they're looking for pass rusher second round. I kind of think they'll go that early. But if your thought is, hey, get a pass rusher on the second day, Marcus Golden from Missouri is here, Trey Flowers, Preston Smith. I'm just kind of reading off names of guys that are on the South team. That's usually where you get your guys in Senior Bowl. If you're picking third overall, you're probably not going to find your number three overall pick here. But you know, if you're looking at these rosters, you know, you look for guys anywhere from the third to the sixth round.
Yeah, which is typically the case. I mean, the guys who are projected as top half of the first round guys don't expose themselves to any extra injury risk if they can avoid it. Looking at the games yesterday, I'm sure you had a chance to take them in or at least see plenty of the highlights of anything you may have missed. What's your early prediction for Super Bowl 49?
It's awfully hard to pick against the Seahawks. I mean, I thought they played about as poorly as they could play and still won. I mean, that's kind of the storyline everybody's coming out with. And you wouldn't expect them to turn the ball over as many times early again. And yet they still come back and won. So, you know, in that game, I don't think it'll be the blowout it was last year, but I thought for the last 8 weeks, the Seahawks were the best team. They sort of slipped in the first three quarters and came back. So you would think they get their feet under them. They've been there. They're not going to be intimidated by it, certainly. So, you know, flip of the coin, say Seattle.
All right, so Logman says that the coaching staff has their big meeting tonight at 8 o'clock. What does the Ozone do all day, and what kind of coverage are you going to provide us at Jaguars.com?
Oh, got a lot going on. No, I wrote something this morning, just sort of greetings from Mobile. This is a neat game in the fact that I kind of see it as one of the last sort of quote-unquote underground events in the NFL. You know, the combine's so high profile now, and, the owners' meetings are kind of ritzy. But, you know, you get to Mobile, there's nothing ritzy about Mobile. This is a football place where you see guys from the Lions talking to their old friends from the Jaguars. If you're a football junkie, this is the place to be because it's still sort of a small-time feel. And, you know, and we'll be getting ready for Senior Bowl game week coverage. We'll talk to Gus when they get in around 4:45. I'm sure he'll tell me what's going on with the coordinator, and we'll have that around 5 o'clock.
Oh, I'm sure you will.
A little sarcasm.
I gotcha. Don't worry, that one didn't slip past the goalie. Well, John, have a good time out there in Mobile as much as is possible. We'll look forward to catching up with you each of the next couple days and finding out what's going on, if Gus Bradley's getting any good intel on some of these seniors and draft picks to be. Have a good day, man. We'll talk to you tomorrow, okay?
All right, guys. Mike, enjoy Jeff, and Jeff, enjoy a Wild West Golden Gun Monday.
There you go.
Thank you, Johnny.
There you go. Right, John Osier. Thank you, buddy. The senior writer from Jaguars.com. Look for his coverage right there and, of course, right here on Jaguars Today as well. Coming up on this date in football history is next, as well as the Honda Drive around the NFL. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday, 1010 XL, 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this state football history brought to you this week by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. We'll start with the birthdays today. Hall of Fame linebacker Joe Schmidt. Ever heard of him, Loggy?
Joe Schmidt. No.
Me either. Born in 1932. Played for the Detroit Lions, so I'm told. Dan Reeves born on this date in 1944 as well. Of course, coach of both all three of the Giants, Broncos, and Falcons at the NFL level. Steve DeBerg, NFL quarterback who, at the time of his retirement, ranked in the top 10 of like every conceivable passing stat, cumulative passing stat in his career. O.J. Anderson, one of Tony's favorite guys.
I do love O.J.
O.J. Anderson. Was he MVP?
He was MVP of Super Bowl 25.
Super Bowl 25.
When they beat Buffalo, and then I got to meet him and interview him for the first time last year on Radio Row.
Born on this date in 1957. Born on this date in 1969. The late Junior Seau did not win a Super Bowl. Made it with the Chargers in the early to mid-90s and again with the Patriots on that undefeated team.
18-1. It's not bad, New England.
18-1. And a sadder man I've rarely seen as I saw Junior Seau enter the tunnel after that game with confetti stuck to his head. It wasn't confetti for you, Junior. And Walter Jones, former Seminole, former Seahawk, now Hall of Fame offensive tackle, born on this date in 1974. Elsewhere on this date in football history, 1969, dueling Pro Bowls. The AFL held their Pro Bowl, and so did the NFL. AFL, known more for their offense. The West beat the East 38-25 in the NFL Pro Bowl, 10-7. Also the West over the East. What an exciting Pro Bowl that must have been to watch.
10-7 Pro Bowl? Can you imagine?
Although now, what is it going to be next Sunday? 70-63?
Oh, yeah.
Something like that.
Don't blitz.
Nobody's going to play any defense.
So five J.J. Watt touchdowns.
Stand around. It could be five J.J. Watt touchdowns. Tony, I'll be there to chronicle the whole thing. For at least a half, I'm guessing.
Hey, going back to the Schmidt thing.
Schmidt.
What was his first name?
Joe.
Yeah, the reason I was a little delayed, because I was sitting back thinking, going all the way back to my rookie year in the National Football League, and there was a guy that I actually had the opportunity to meet, and I pulled this article up so you guys could see the picture. His name is actually, it's not Joe Schmidt, it was John Schmidt, and that's why I was kind of sitting there processing it for a minute. And I was like, well, I don't know a Joe Schmidt, but I know a John Schmidt. John Schmidt was the center for the New York Jets back when Joe Namath, and obviously they took him to a world championship. And he was one of the greatest guys that I have ever met. Because, you know, as a player in the National Football League, you get the opportunity to meet some of the greats that have played for an organization. And when I was in New York, I got obviously a chance to meet some of the Jet greats, you know. And Joe Namath, classy guy, great guy. I mean, we'll sit down in the locker room and sit down in the stool beside you. And I had so many conversations with Joe. And, you know, and I didn't grow up watching Joe Namath. I mean, I was just so young at that time and really wasn't into football yet. I was probably more into, you know, Army men and building blocks and stuff like that.
Right.
But I got a chance to meet Joe, and then I also got a chance to meet John Schmidt, who was the center in that era. And, boy, you want to talk about some of the great experiences, being able to meet guys that kind of paved the way to make the game what it is today. I always thought it was a great honor to talk to those guys and really to kind of pick their brain as to what it was like for them to play in the National Football League in their era.
You would love going to the Super Bowl, Radio Row, man. I mean, that's what it's chock full of. You know, these guys telling their stories 1 week out of the year, you know. And for them, I mean, Rocky Blyer probably has a very nice life. But 1 week of the year, my man wraps four knuckles on the table with a ring on each one. And Rocky Blyer is the king of the world, man. Some really, really cool stories, Jeff. And Tony and I have said this many times. We've met, particularly in recent years, you know, with all the head trauma stuff that's been going on and the concussion lawsuits.
Yeah.
And not only that, but guys like Ray Lucas would come, who got addicted to painkillers, you know, and talk about their experience and, you know, the dangers of doing that and trying to warn guys for the future. And the whole Gridiron Greats program, which Mike Ditka has been a big face of. You know, just trying to make sure that these guys who help pave the way, as you talked about, get taken care of financially with all the money that's floating around. And we've met some guys with some gnarled up hands, some who can barely stand, who are, you know, in their 50s, limping around with a cane, and yet to meet a single guy. So if you knew everything, all the pain you're going to go through, all the, in some cases, drug addiction, bankruptcies, hitting rock bottom, not one of them has ever said they wouldn't do it again.
No, but most of those guys that would say that aren't on Radio Row. You know what I mean? I mean,
yeah.
There are some guys that would say that. If I could do it all over again,
probably
I would do some things differently. You know, I remember having a conversation with Ronnie Lott and was very fortunate to be able to play with Ronnie when he came to New York at the end of his career after, you know, many years with the 49ers and, you know, I mean, Super Bowls, et cetera, and was a great, great guy and ultimate competitor. And I remember talking to Ronnie about, you know, the whole finger story, about how he, you know, broke the finger in the championship game, ended up having it basically cut off instead of operated on because he didn't want to miss the following week's game. And I asked Ronnie about that. Would you do it all over again? And he said, no, he wouldn't do it again. You know, but I mean, that's
Ronnie Lott. And I get that.
Case.
But one of the guys who I always think of in this circumstance, Randy Grimes, right? Played fairly anonymously for the Buccaneers for about a decade. Didn't win anything of significance. You know, he was in between that Bucs team that went to the NFC Championship game with Doug Williams and obviously the Bucs I wouldn't even say return to glory, rise to glory. So, you know, guy crippling, chronic pain, been through, you know, depression, all kinds of financial issues. And I thought, this is a guy. Finally, I found a guy. Nope. He's like, oh, no. Of course I'd do it all again, you know, because the benefits outweigh. So certainly I can understand your point of view. A guy like Ronnie Lott, guys like that, of course they would do it all again.
Oh, he'd do everything. But there's certain things that you might do differently. Well, of course. Know, I mean, you know, with age comes wisdom, and you'd like to have, you know, another go at it with a little bit more knowledge the second time around. But, I mean, I think everybody has. So I was kind of laugh about McCarthy's statements after the game. Well, you know, what would you
I
do
I knew it was coming back to that.
No, I wouldn't do anything different. Yeah, you would. You lost the game. Damn
score
right you
points.
Do something differently.
This date in football history brought to you by Dr. McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry right here in town on Gay Parkway. Whether you need cosmetic work done, if you're just in the market for a family dentist, maybe you want the custom fit stop snoring mouth guard, 620-9225, the number. Visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Yeah, that Ray Lucas story is the one that sticks with me after all these. Just him talking about waking up in the morning and having to take, you know, 15 pills so he can walk.
And he would, Tony, he was a backup primarily
right.
through most of his career. I would guess he probably started 20-odd games for the Jets over the year, something
just
like that.
Unbelievable stuff. And we'll be out there again next week, hopefully get some more of those stories for everybody. The New England Patriots, we talked about this a little bit, and playoff controversy seemed to go hand in hand. The newest one involves whether or not the Patriots were playing with deflated footballs during last night's AFC Championship game. The NFL has confirmed that they are looking into whether or not this occurred. If it is found to be true, the Patriots could be losing some draft picks. Remember last week when Gary Kubiak said he wasn't going to interview for any head coaching jobs and that he was completely happy to stay in Baltimore as the Ravens' offensive coordinator? Well, apparently the Chicago job wasn't enough to get him to consider coming back to the head coaching ranks, but Denver is. Kubiak was John Elway's backup with the Broncos. He was also the offensive coordinator for Elway and the Broncos from 95 until 2005, during which time the Broncos won back-to-back Super Bowl titles in 97 and 98. Now Kubiak is returning to Denver as the head coach. Quarterback Peyton Manning still non-committal about whether or not he will be returning for next season.
All right, there you have it. Go back to that story about you know, the dangers of pro football and all that. There's a big feature being done on the 85 Bears. Okay, and Peter King wrote about it today in part in his Monday Morning Quarterback column. And, you know, just talked about, obviously, some of the brain trauma that's associated with it. And Jim McMahon was highlighted in there. And I don't know if it was his wife or his girlfriend, whatever, his significant other. And he would say, hey, I'm going to go to the store. Okay, I'm going to go get a dip, go whatever. I'm going to run out of the store. She said, okay. He'd walk in the next room. 30 minutes later, she'd walk in. He'd be standing there, confused, not, and she'd say to him, you were going to go to the store. Oh, okay. That's right. I'm going to the store. So he'd go to the store, get his dip, whatever, and then he'd have to call her, how do I get home? I don't know how I get home. So he's obviously been through the ringer with this. Now, again, Ditka has been a face of this fundraising effort for former players for at least 7 or 8 years, possibly considerably longer than that. I'm just talking about my recollections of seeing him talk about this, Jeff. And in the story, I believe it was Peter King asking Mike Ditka, do you think this is something that could change the game? Will this eventually bring about the death of the game, if you know, because of all these injuries? And he said, well, let me ask it to you this way. Ditka said, if you had an 8-year-old, would you want him to play football? He said, I wouldn't. That Ditka. This is Mike Ditka talking here. What about you?
You know, the game's been so good to me, and you know, I was one of those guys that had many injuries, many surgeries. You know, I think 9 different procedures in 10 years. I would do it all over again. I have no regrets. It's the game's been incredibly good to me. It still continues to be incredibly good to me. Would I push somebody to have their son or my son play the game? No. Would I prohibit them from playing the game or discourage them from playing the game? Absolutely not. You know, I think it's a wonderful game. I think that the amount of advancements that they have made in awareness, whether it be the way that the game is played, the way that the players are treated medically, I think certainly come a very long way. Now, I remember in high school, you know, having concussion in high school, but you know, I mean, you didn't call it a concussion, you just called it getting dinged, you know, and you just went right back in a game and you finished the game, and then the next week you played the game. I mean, it's just kind of how it was, you know. So the awareness is so much better now, and the medical technology is so much better now I wouldn't have a problem with my kid playing the game.
Just for clarification, say King was recounting a conversation in this HBO Real Sports special that's going to air on the Bears between Brian Gumbel and Ditka. It wasn't King having that conversation with Ditka, but the outcome's the same. Ditka says, if you had an 8-year-old kid now, would you tell him you want to play football? Gumbel said, I wouldn't. Would you? Ditka said, no. That's sad, but I wouldn't, and my whole life was football. I think the risk is worse than the reward. I really do.
Yeah, and see, I kind of have a little bit of an issue kind of with Ditka saying that, because if that's the case, then why do you continue to work in the game and to promote the game? Because of your, obviously, you're doing what you're doing as a broadcaster. You know, so if you really feel that way, shouldn't you really just totally absolve yourself of any role whatsoever in the game?
It's a fair point, but at the same time, I think you can separate, for me, like, I can appreciate the game and I cover the game in the National Football League, and my son has shown no inclination to want to become a football player, so I'm okay with that, but I would be very fearful for my kid because of all what we know now. And you talk, you know, it used to be you just got dinged. Well, you were getting a concussion. You just weren't properly calling it or diagnosing it, maybe, right, what it was. So, you know, when you hear these stories about guys, and not just guys that played in the NFL for a decade, I mean, guys that in college get 2 or 3 concussions and they have a lot of difficulty coping, you know, in with basic life things at times after that. It's interesting when you hear a guy, Iron Mike, you know, who's such a renowned football tough guy,
right,
to say that. You know, Kurt Warner said it a few years ago. It caused a big stink for exactly what you're talking about. Hey, this game's been really good to you, but he's saying, hey, you know what? It's like let's say you're a prize fighter. Well, maybe I had to do that coming up, and do I want my kid getting punched in the head for a living? You know, maybe I can provide him a life that he doesn't have to do that kind of thing. It's a tough thing, and I understand both sides of the equation.
It's very different, you know, and there's a lot of different opinions on that. And but I mean, to me, football is one of the great games that there is, and there's so many interesting, romantic, I guess you could say, compartments of the game that are so appealing to people. You know, it's a gladiator game. It's an athletic game. You could go on and talk about how that game affects every different person in a different way and what makes them passionate about it. But, you know, I think the one thing about the game that a lot of people don't truly understand, and I never really even appreciated it, because, I mean, when you're in the game, you really don't understand it from a spectator standpoint. Now, I'll never forget this. When I stopped playing the game, which my last year was 1998, and I think it was the following year, 99, or it might have been in 2000, and I was still doing the Jaguars television stuff at that time and weekly television shows and was doing games for Fox. And then certain weekends I wouldn't work, so I was at the Jaguars game in attendance. And at times at the end of the game, I would walk down and go field level and watch the game from field level at the end of the game. And I'll never forget the first time that I actually went down to the sideline and watched a professional football game after I was done playing. And I remember walking away going, I can't believe that I did that. The violence of the game is unbelievable at the pro level. And I think that's the one thing that people really don't truly appreciate. Because, you know, when you watch it on TV, it doesn't look like it's that big of a deal. But when you are actually on the sideline watching the game and can see, feel, and understand how violent it is, it gives you a different perspective.
You make a great point. We got a break, but just one thing that will coincide with that. One of the first times I was ever down, they used to let everybody down in the final 2 minutes, all the media who wanted to go down final 2 minutes of the game. A lot of that changed after 9/11. Some teams still allow it, but it's been a lot more curtailed. I remember being on the sideline watching Keenan McCardo get, I don't know who the opponent was, just absolutely blown up. I mean, again, at field level, this is happening 15, 20 feet away from you. And the speed at which it happened, and I look up and I watch a replay, and in watching the replay, I'm like, man, you would never realize how violent it's that crazy, was, man. With just that hit that just took place in real time in front of my face, and then to watch the same exact hit on replay just took such a large degree of the violence out of it. And it's not anyone's fault. It's just it doesn't always translate. And that was just a typical play on a typical snap in a typical game, and this happens thousands of times every single weekend.
Yeah, when
ain't for the faint of heart.
When I had that perspective, I remember going to myself, That's why I had 9 surgical procedures.
Exactly. He's Jeff Blogman. I'm Mike Dempsey along with Fat Tony. We will come back. We'll take a little deeper look at this offensive coordinator situation report out from Big Cat Country. The Jags may be trying to snag 3 offensive coaches at the same time. We'll get into that coming up next here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Name that tune, Loggy. Yeah, Tyler just told us that.
But I don't know the name of the song.
All right, what do we got, Tyler?
It's called Wood.
Wood.
Wood. I like that song. I like all of their songs.
A little less country.
Well, yeah, the last one sounded a little country. That's all I could tell
it
you.
It did.
You know?
I'm into Wood. In multiple ways.
Okay, I could see that. You're an outdoorsman.
Well, I mean,
you're into the woods.
I like to be in the woods.
I can see some Colts fans listening to Alice in Chains today, a little depressed.
I like to chop some
wood. I like to grow wood. Trees.
Okay.
Got a little tree farm.
Yeah.
And I like to create things with wood.
You're a whittler?
So therefore, the nickname Logs.
Okay. Well, I thought, I don't know, your name Logaman might have something to do with it. You like to create things with wood. What's the last thing you created out of wood?
Lots of things.
Give me one.
I've made everything from decorative mantles to art to.
So you're a bit of a carpenter. How would you describe yourself?
I did a little bit of everything. I mean, I build deer stands. I build.
That's all.
Arts
I just wanted an example.
I mean, I do a lot of different things. No, I don't whittle, though. You know, one of the guys that was one of my heroes growing up was Dave Butts. You know, defensive tackle,
sure.
Washington Redskins. He was an avid carver or whittler. He used to make duck decoys and was exceptionally good at it by hand. And so, obviously the Redskins, you know, where I grew up, you know, that was basically in my backyard. And being around a lot of the Redskins growing up, and Dave Butts was one of my favorites. I mean, he was just a monster of a man. I mean, the biggest man that I had ever seen in my life at that time. And to know that he was big into carving and wood and stuff, because I mean I had an affinity for wood when I was growing up as a kid. I remember when I was in middle school and actually got to take a shop class, you know, and I was like, man, this is great. This is awesome. Can I major in wood?
Right, you get credit. You probably go to some vocational school.
That.
And you could absolutely
had, well,
do
we
that.
Actually had a vocational school in the county that I grew up in, and some guys went half a day in high school. And trained to be, whether it be a mason or a electrician or whatever.
We had something in DeLand called, they called it the Bulldog Builders. Basically, same thing, half a day, and then you went and learned how to build houses, you know, which was, hey, nothing wrong with that, man. That's a heck of a trade. People need houses. So
absolutely.
There you go. They used to try to get me to work full time at Publix. They used to tell me people always gonna need food.
All right, so you had asked about talking to some of the old timers and about some of the things and you know the physical elements. I actually made a list.
Of yours.
Of mine.
Right, I tell you, hold that. Let's get Tom. Tom's been hanging on. Let's get his question in. We'll go through the Logaman list of physical ailments and then a couple of thoughts on the offensive coordinator position as well. Tom, thanks for the call. You're up next on Jaguars Today. Go ahead.
Tom on Fleming Island.
Yeah, what's up?
Look, let me make a comment and then ask a question. My comment is, Jeff, great work on breaking down different things on Monday nights. I really enjoy it. My wife enjoys it also.
Thank you, Tom.
And then my question is, the winners yesterday, there happened to be a couple of running backs that did pretty good jobs. And in today's paper, the mock draft that Hayes did, I noticed that the number 29 pick, Indianapolis, there's a running back that looks like Melvin Gordon from Wisconsin, which I have followed. And holy smokes, if we could ever get that guy on our team, that would be outstanding.
The guy that I was thinking about, if you could ever get that guy on your team, was Marshawn Lynch, the way that he played yesterday. You know, because, I mean, there are reports that him and Pete Carroll don't get along.
Oh, there was a report.
Could be available.
Right. Well, there was a report today that said the Seahawks are much more amenable right now to bringing Marshawn Lynch back for another year.
He's an absolute beast. I mean, the guy, if they don't have Marshawn Lynch yesterday, they do not win that football game.
I don't think Marshawn Lynch would ever play here. Simply because he's a guy who's won a Super Bowl, may have 2 Super Bowl rings. He doesn't seem to be, you know, I don't know. What the, maybe he would, maybe he'd just want to play anywhere, but.
He loves Gus now.
Well, true. But I would think typically a guy like that, that was such a step down from two-time Super Bowl champ or Super Bowl winner, Super Bowl runner-up is the worst he's going to do. So let's go to a team that's won 7 games over the last 2 years.
Yeah, but just because you've won 7 games over the last 2 years doesn't mean you're going to win only 7 in the next 2.
Understood. You don't see it too often. Teams going from big winning franchises in the NFL to the opposite end of the spectrum.
I'm just saying in a perfect world.
Oh, I hear you.
I'd love to have that guy. And, you know, there's all the other things that become topics with him. You know, he wanted to wear gold shoes and, you know, he doesn't give interviews. He gives one-word answers to every different question.
Thanks for asking.
I don't care about any of that. I mean, the guy's a football player. Love him. Love him. I mean, the way that he just literally provides energy to a football team on game day is unparalleled. There's no other running back in the game that can ignite a football team like Marshawn Lynch. And a lot of people say, well, what about the running back in Dallas? Well, isn't he pretty good? Yeah, he's a good player, but he doesn't ignite the football team like Marshawn Lynch does. He's just unbelievable in my mind.
All right, give it to us, Loggy. The Loggy list of maladies over the years.
Well, I'll just start with this.
How many years in the NFL?
10 years.
10 years. Okay.
Yeah, 10 years, and these are all the surgical procedures. Right knee ACL reconstruction, left knee microfracture, left knee meniscus repair, right shoulder anterior capsular shift, which is a reconstruction, left shoulder AC resection, which they cut the end of your collarbone off with a saw. Left shoulder had a torn labrum that was trimmed and had an umbilical hernia repair. Grew up having an innie, and then it became an outie where my intestine was poking out of my belly button.
Yeah, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, so they fixed that. Played 2 years with that. Right arm bicep tendon tear completely off the bone. Left knee had a chondromalacia behind the kneecap cleaned up. And then my right arm, I had a chemical burn from treatment, which they eventually had to cut out because it was such a thin layer of healing skin, they cut it out and pulled it back together and sewed it.
Well, were the leeches not available that day? What, what treatment was this exactly?
I believe against the Pittsburgh Steelers and John Jackson. I think it was John Jackson, the tackle at that time, peeled back and speared me literally right in the arm, right there where your shoulder muscles, your bicep, tricep all come together. And it was literally almost paralyzed my arm. I couldn't even finish the game. And so during the week, they were always concerned about contact in that particular arm is that you would have calcium to continue to form on the arm in that particular spot. And so there was a treatment out there that they said, okay, this is supposed to help stop that from happening where the calcium just keeps on building. And it becomes a very sensitive area. And the treatment that was out there was they would use a Ferrese, which was kind of a little capsule that they would inject fluid on it. And then the capsule was kind of adhesive, and it had an area that you would inject fluid into. It would sit on top of the skin. You would hook it up to an electronic charge, and it would help drive that fluid in to the skin or into the arm to help break up the calcium deposit that was forming. And it was supposed to be acetic acid, which the acetic acid mix was supposed to be anywhere from 3 to 5%. Well, our trainer at that time calls the pharmacy and gets acetic acid and gets it delivered to the complex. They put it on my arm, and when it was on, I told him, I said, look, I said, this doesn't feel very good. And he said, well, you're supposed to have a sensation. So I think, I'm soft, you know, I'm just soft, you know, so suck it up. So I suck it up. A few minutes later, it starts to really hurt, and I said, he told me it's supposed to sting, so I've just got to suck it up. So I suck it up, right? And after a while, it just stops hurting. And so I get done with the treatment, and acetic acid smells like vinegar, so it smells terrible. So I take a towel with rubbing alcohol to wipe it off to get rid of that smell, and when I took the towel and rubbed my arm, literally a slab of skin in a perfect shape of the Ferrese, the adhesive,
slid off.
It just came right off of my arm, and it was immediately raw. Well, come to find out, the acetic acid that he had gotten from the pharmacy was glacial. It was pure. It was not 3 to 5%.
They hadn't stepped on their acetic acid yet.
And so
it was like 100%.
I had an oval on my arm that basically remained raw for the remainder of that season that I had to keep covered up. And eventually when it did heal, it was just almost like a keloid skin. So you could just take your fingernail and just flick it a little bit, and it would just get raw again. And so eventually they cut that out, pulled the skin together, and then sewed a straight line, or at least I'd have some healthy skin in that area.
And it feels fine to this day.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, it's one of the many. You know, I mean, and there's so many things that you have had happen that you never even had a surgical procedure on. You know, a herniated C5-6 in my neck, Liz Frank injury in my foot, plantar fasciitis, you know, broke both thumbs, have three what I call boutonniere fingers where the tendon splits on top of your finger and then it starts to pull it in a bent fashion and never straightens all the way out. You know, I got three of them. I mean, there's so many things that you don't have surgical procedures on when you play the game, and you play with them. And that's availability is
the best,
most
ability.
Important thing.
I hear you. You I know? Hear you. All right, there you go, Loggy.
Thank goodness for modern medicine to be able to, one, to fix me, and number two, to give me the ability to play with all those different ailments.
Yeah, well, that's one way of looking at it, I suppose.
Let's say, how are the knees? I think I counted five.
Okay. As far as surgical procedures, I mean, I had three procedures on my left and one on my right.
Okay.
And the ACL reconstruction was great. Didn't really have any issue with that. Still don't have any issue with it today. The left knee, the microfracture, I still have an issue with that. You know, as far as like, if I tried to bend down on one knee and I get to the point where the bone, it becomes bone on bone, I immediately will collapse and go to the floor because I can't fight through that spot in my range of motion on my left knee. So you're aware of that, and you just
try to avoid that situation.
Fortunately, that spot that's bone on bone is further down in my range of motion to where it's not quite 90. It's just slightly above 90 degrees with my knee, but you just have to be aware of it.
All right, we got to take a time out. The boss is in the house, by the way. Leather jacket, sunglasses, ponytail. Talking about Shad. He just walked by. And he doesn't care, Jeff. Who's going to tell him that you're indoors? Take those sunglasses off. Not me.
Not me.
You know what? He can wear whatever he likes. So some thought that Shad may be here as the final check signer to try to get some, some of these offensive coaches sign on the dotted line. And if, in fact, the Big Cat Country story is correct, maybe the Jags are trying to hit it on multiple levels all at once with Adam Gase and Doug Marrone and Greg Olsen as OC, offensive line coach, and perhaps quarterbacks coach, respectively. We'll touch on that when we come back. Also, today's fan feedback question of the day. Who do you want to win Super Bowl 49? Who are you rooting for, and why? Do you have to come up with a reason to root for or against somebody if these are not your teams playing in Super Bowl 49? Share your thoughts with us on Twitter and, of course, Facebook.com/Jaguars today as well. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Russell takes the snap, drops back. He's going to throw down the middle. He's got a man. Come on. Touchdown. The game is over. The Seahawks are going back to the Super Bowl in Glendale. What a catch in the end zone.
Everybody counted us out. Y'all didn't believe in us. A whole bunch of people thought we weren't going to make it, right? We were 6-4. Oh, that's okay. They got a winning record, but they're not going to go to the playoffs. Remember that? 16-0 at the first half. How many of y'all counted us out? How many of y'all doubted us? It's indicative of our entire season. Y'all don't want to believe in us, it's okay. We ain't got to believe in us because we're going to believe in ourselves. We ain't worried about y'all. We worried about ourselves. When it was 16-0 at halftime, guess what we said? Don't trip. You don't win the game in the first half, you win the game in the second half. But what we do, we come out and we do what we do. We play Seahawks football. We got an opportunity to do what we love, and we'll see y'all in the Super Bowl.
Doug Baldwin, what an oppressed, underappreciated fellow he is. And, you know, for a guy who doesn't care what y'all think, was pretty much able to cite chapter and verse of what everybody else thought.
Right.
Right? Oh, y'all didn't think this, that. Oh, we don't care. We don't read the press clippings. I mean, we don't read that. We don't listen to radio. Oh, but you can sure respond with every perceived slight that's ever been thrown your way.
Right. I mean, Richard Sherman last year, I understood Richard Sherman's, because whatever's going on with him and Crabtree was obviously personal. Whatever his deal is with Michael Crabtree. And I actually enjoyed it. I enjoyed what Richard Sherman did after that game last year. I liked watching him scare reporters who didn't know how to react to that kind of intensity. Doug Baldwin's makes no sense to me. This idea that no one believed in Seattle. That, who said they didn't believe in Seattle?
The reality of it is that who said that one of the requirements to play in the National Football League is to be well-adjusted and mentally cool and even.
True.
I mean, sometimes that actually can be to your detriment as a player.
We like to point it out, though, when guys are not those things.
And it was so funny watching Richard Sherman after this game, because I don't know if you saw any of his post-game interviews, and I know he's hurt. The elbow's obviously hurt. But compared to what you saw from him last year, where he was a story for 2 weeks leading into the Super Bowl because of that emotion you saw, and for a country that didn't know maybe a whole lot about the Seahawks, were discovering a guy like Richard Sherman. He's in the locker room after this game. He's like, yeah, you know, I mean, we found a way to win it at the end. We did what we do. Are you going to play in the Super Bowl? Yeah, I'll be out there. Just completely low-key and cool about everything. He's letting Doug Baldwin be the crazy man this year.
And to be fair to Erin Andrews, I don't think she was scared of Richard Sherman at all. It was some producer in a truck somewhere who was like, oh, America cannot see this.
What's he going to say?
This true emotion on the face of Richard Sherman. Before we get to the fan feedback L-O-B. Spotlight, Jeff, Big Cat Country reporting today they have a source that indicates the Jags would be interested in hiring Adam Gase as their offensive coordinator. Ian Rappaport said it's likely to come down to the Ravens and the Jags on that score. He was interviewing here yesterday with the Jags. Also, Doug Marrone, former head coach of the Buffalo Bills, a potentially a candidate to fill what, you know, I don't know how you look at the offensive line position. I don't think anybody knows right now what George Yarno's health situation is going to be like going forward. You certainly wish him the best. And then you've got Greg Olsen, who, despite the fact that Jaguar fans are going to remember him as part of an ill-fated Mike Mularkey regime where he worked with Blaine Gabbert as a quarterbacks coach, and clearly Blaine hasn't developed into much. He has a good reputation around the National Football League.
He has a very good reputation.
Right, and he spent the last couple of years as OC out there in Oakland, and perhaps in a quarterback coaching capacity or other capacity, what would you think about the trio of hires if it in fact came to pass?
I think any time that you can get great minds on offense to collaborate, I think that's great. The question is can you get them all to collaborate together? You know, I think that's sometimes can be very difficult. You know, if you have three guys that all have very strong personalities and they don't mesh, that can be a problem. So you need to make sure that personalities can all mesh. And I don't know if these guys have any experience with each other in the past. That would obviously be probably one of the main questions about if this report is in fact true. Can you get these three guys to work together and to come together every week? You know, but I mean, as far as I'm concerned, if you can get the best minds in football, and I said this back to you, I think it was, back in, you know, November, December, you know, with Mike Smith, you know, his future up in the air with the Atlanta Falcons, I said, but if he does get fired, I hope he ends up back here. And some people are like, why do you need Mike Smith back here? The defense is doing good. And Gus, look, he's another great mind. I mean, Mike Smith is a guy that defensively understands what the concepts that offensive have. And each week he does a great job of preparing defenses for making them aware of what the offense is trying to accomplish. And to me, anytime you can add a great mind on any side of the football to improve your staff, you take that opportunity. Because that's something that the Baltimore Ravens, I think, have done an exceptional job at through the years, is constantly trying to improve their staff. Look at the number of ex-head coaches that have ended up on their staff.
True. You look at the case of Mike Smith. It's odd that when you see a guy who is known for one side of the football, which is the defensive side, obviously, as the defensive coordinator here in Jacksonville, he gets the head coaching gig, and his team is known primarily for the other side of the football, having success almost exclusively on offense and struggling on defense. I understand you can only coach the players that they provide to you.
Right.
And that's a big part of it. But you don't see that too often, you know, where like an offensive-minded head coach goes somewhere and the offense is miserable.
Well, you had an offensive-minded general manager. You had a defensive-minded head coach.
True.
In Atlanta with Smitty.
And plus, what Brian Billick was an offensive-minded guy, went to the Ravens, and they were anything but offensive-minded when he won the Super Bowl. You know, did just
great
enough.
Defense. But their personnel was, I mean, they spent oodles of draft picks, although, you know, they weren't maybe offensive-minded throwing the football just because they didn't have the man that could throw the football very well. I mean, Trent Dilfer was very limited.
Right.
They ran the football extremely well.
Jamal Lewis was a 2,000-yard runner for him.
Back.
And they had Shannon Sharp, who, well, they didn't have a great wealth of talent at wide receiver. One of the best, you know, top five tight ends of all time.
One of the most talented football teams, I think that I've ever seen as far as, you know, across the board. The only, if they had a great quarterback in Baltimore in that era, I think they could have been unstoppable. That's how good they were personnel-wise on defense. And up front, offensively, on the offensive line, very good. Running back was good. Shannon Sharp, excellent tight end. Wide receivers were, I mean, how good were they? You don't know when you don't have a great quarterback.
True.
Or a quarterback that's capable.
Who do you want to win the Super Bowl? Do you have a rooting? Will you root for one team over the other?
I'm always going to root for Pete Carroll. You know, Pete was my coach in New York from my second year through my sixth year. So what's that? 4 years as the defensive coordinator. Then 1 year he was the head coach in New York. And I always root for Pete. And I will continue to root for Pete. And I'll be just like when Coughlin was in the Super Bowls. You know, you root for Tom Coughlin. And I rooted for him. For me, it's about relationships. So I'm looking forward to rooting for Pete Carroll again.
I will probably root against Belichick. I've never, even as a Jets fan, I never rooted against Brady particularly. There's nothing about him that really offended me. You know, it bothered me.
I love him, but you know, Bill Belichick is a guy that rubs people the wrong way. You know, and he kind of rubs me the wrong way. And he's very close-minded when it comes to the media and the way that I think that his players are treated. They can get treated at times like they're just, a member of the herd, so to speak. And I don't really like that. So I like to see coaches that treat the game, I think, and then Belichick respects the game, but I think Pete treats the game as more than just a job. And I think he treats his players in a pretty good fashion. And I think I always like to see guys like that with that approach and that attitude to have success. Because it's a copycat league. The more success that Bill Belichick has, the more Bill Belichicks you see in the league. And so I want to see more Pete Carrolls in the league, like Gus is.
Tony, who are you rooting for?
Oh, Seattle. Easy. Like I said, Russell Wilson's my favorite player in the league. And I, watching the reaction to what that first half was, as Russell is clearly playing the worst 30 minutes that we've seen him play as a professional. And when you go back and look, I looked, he has never had a 4-interception game since he left high school, at least. He didn't ever have it in college. It's the worst game he's played since he graduated from high school at the bare minimum. It happens to be on that big a stage, and to watch all the wolves with their knives come out, the guys who think that Russell's overrated where he is, and then...
Oh, was Prisco tweeting up a storm yesterday?
Oh, I'm sure he was. I love watching, and I get it. I don't think that Russell Wilson's one of the top five quarterbacks in the league or anything like that. I think that he's as much fun to watch as anybody in the league is right now. He makes plays that you're just like, how did that happen? And I agree, Jeff and I, we were talking about this earlier. When you watch the All-22, he has problems. There are issues with his game, but he's so much fun to watch, and they find a way. And because of that kind of thing, yeah, I'm pulling for Seattle. I'm tired of New England and Brady and Belichick and that whole thing. I'm just sick of it. But I'll pull for Russell.
See, I'm a little conflicted. I mean, I'm rooting for Pete. But at the same time, I also am pulling for Tom Brady. Because, I mean, just because what he's been able to do at the quarterback position through the years to me is just exceptional. So in kind of a way, I mean, I really don't have a rooting interest except for Pete, you know. And Tom Brady, to me, that the relationship between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick is something that I think we don't truly appreciate. When we're talking about one of the greatest coach quarterback combinations that has ever been. And what is it, 20 playoff wins now, or 19 playoff wins, one in the game? I think it's 20 now. It's the most of all time. I think a lot of times when you watch it, in today's game, you don't truly appreciate what you are watching. Sometimes it takes years to kind of go back in. People start having that conversation. You remember back when our football team had Belichick and Brady and how great they were, and you start to reflect them on where they fall in history. It's hard to do that when it's actually happening. But a lot of times you can do that. And to me, if you haven't done that with Brady and Belichick, you're missing the boat. And all that stuff about Spygate and all that kind of stuff, I mean, come on. I mean, to me, I just like, whatever. You know, I'm not a big believer in that, you know, the Belichick is a cheater, and that this whole thing about the ball inflation, deflation thing in his past game, whatever.
They could have played with a Nerf ball and still won by 30.
It wouldn't have mattered.
They could have. Doesn't mean he didn't try to, you know, gain an advantage. I don't know if he did. I'm just saying, just because you didn't need it doesn't mean you didn't do it. right? And again, I go back to the example of Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. Everybody says, well, they're Hall of Famers anyway.
Yeah, but you know what, though? I mean, heck, you go back in time. I mean, all teams tried to create an edge. I mean, I remember being in the locker room in New York, and we weren't a very good football team. We used to sit there and do our jerseys and get it tightened up as tight as we possibly could, and then you'd put your arms up in the air, and you'd have a can of silicone, and the guy would be sitting there spraying your entire jersey down with silicone
right.
as a defensive lineman so nobody could grab a hold of you. Was that legal? No. Did
well,
they do it? Yeah.
At one time, I don't think there was a rule against it, and then they outlawed it.
Well, they outlawed it, and we still did it.
Well,
until they started taking
cheater.
Away game checks and threatening to throw you out of the game wasn't until we stopped doing it. But, I mean, that's the things that you did.
Quick look at some of the responses, Tony. We asked people who they're rooting for and why in particular.
Here's what we got from Doug. Patriots because they don't need a 12th man, only less air. Hashtag, I hate when my balls are deflated. From Steven, is there any way they both can lose? From Joseph, Seahawks. So they sweep Manning, Brady, back-to-back Super Bowls, Gus's ex-team. From Eric, Seattle, don't care for New England all that much, and now add Deflategate, too? Yeah, go Hawks. From Peter, Seahawks, I was pulling for the Packers. The Seahawks never gave up. I think Brady is way too pampered. Hashtag hate the Pats. From MyInfo, New York Jags says, Seattle Seahawks because the Legion of Boom, and they have a physical defense. From Richard, Seattle, because my mother-in-law is a huge Patriots fan. Hashtag go against the in-laws. Hashtag Brady loves saggy balls.
And nothing wrong with going against the in-laws either. I'll leave you with this thought. Josh Sitton, talking to ESPN, he's the starting left guard for the Packers, said, quote, it feels like a waste of 7-8 months. I'd rather have not even made the playoffs, obviously, than lose in the fashion that they did yesterday. Hey, Josh, we'll trade you.
Okay? Yeah.
We'll trade you. So
no,
with,
no, but I
get
mean, hey, look, you know, that's an emotional game.
Right.
And, you know, when you have something happen to you like what happened to the Packers yesterday, it's incredibly deflating. But, you know, I was sitting there when I was watching that game at the very end. And Seattle all of a sudden started coming back, and I was sitting there thinking, I wonder how the Alaskan Crab Fleet are even functioning right now. Because, you know, all the guys from Deadliest Catch are all Seattle Seahawks fans.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, well, that's my all thoughts run to what the guys on Deadliest Catch must be thinking at any given moment, Jeff.
I'm just getting fired up for the Deadliest Catch coming up.
Not
here in
just, of course
couple
you
months.
Were. We know that. We know that.
Yeah. It's the only show I watch.
Well, that and American Pickers. Pickers. I finally remember the two that you watch. He is Jeff Logman. Enjoy the rest of your week off. We'll miss you next week.
Yeah.
We'll be out in Phoenix. Yep. And then we'll wrap up with you, at least for the time being, with a post-Super Bowl show 2 weeks from today. Look forward to it. Great stuff as always. Thanks, man.
Thank you, Mike.
Appreciate it. Thanks to John Osier for stopping by today as well from Jaguars.com. Look for his coverage from the Senior Bowl. Tomorrow we'll check in hopefully with Dan Hicken out there in Mobile as well as the Ozone and plenty more. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony for Jeff Logman, Joe Fortunato, Tyler Devitt. That does it for us. Thanks to Wild West Guns and Gold. They bring you the show every Monday. XL Primetime next on 1010XL 92.5 FM.